Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway, so I was born.
All right, so I'm sitting here at Worldcon with Scott Lynch, and I always mispronounce the name of the book. It's The Lies of...
The Lies of Locke Lamora.
Locke Lamora. Okay.
You're in very good company. Guy Gabriel K. totally butchered it at the World Fantasy Awards in 2007. Not that I bear a grudge.
Well, it's funny because I also do Functional Nerds, and I have arranged it in such a way that John Emilio always introduces the guests and says the books because I screw them up. So now I let him screw them up, and then I mock him relentlessly.
Excellent.
But when I have people on SF Signal, I got to remember how to do it correctly, which just sucks. Now... We've been trying to connect for a couple of days here. Do you hit Worldcon a lot? Is this like your first Worldcon, third Worldcon?
This is actually my second Worldcon.
Second Worldcon.
My first was Chicago, which was last year.
Yep.
I'd always been meaning to come to Worldcon, but I just never arranged it. So now that I've sort of reemerged from the misery and chrysalis of the last couple of years, I've been coming to a lot more cons since late 2010. Or maybe mid-2011 is more accurate.
Okay.
So I hope to be at Worldcons henceforth.
Are you enjoying the con experience?
Yes. It's tiring. I'm a little bit frazzled, and this whiskey sour I just had is doing marvels for my mental landscape. It is a lot of... I mean, it's difficult to explain because it's fun. It's all fun. It's a great time, but for those of us who are, you know, working writers, it's also work. And it is editorial lunch, you know, meeting with various, you know, publishers, agents, God knows what. I mean, I don't have an agent here, so I don't have to deal with that. But it's, you know, interview, maybe sleep sometime,
right.
et cetera.
Yep. And I was telling them, last night was the first night I actually slept. Because I've just been so wired, and you go to bed, and you just toss and turn, and then your alarm goes off.
Yeah.
They can be kind of exhausting.
You start out, I mean, if you start going to cons, like my first con I went to was when I was 22. And at that age, it's like, you stay up until 6 in the morning and drink all night. And you hit your mid-30s and you kind of have to slow down. And it's like, hey, sleep all night and exercise in the morning and drink lots of water.
You're sitting there and you're thinking, wow, man, this has been a really long day. Everything's going well. You know, I'm sure they're going to be closing the bar soon. And you look at your phone and it's 9:30.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, well, it must be late. Time to, oh my God, it's not even, you know, 6 o'clock yet.
And people are like, no, the party is just starting.
Yes, and in some cases it is. The thing is that what I've discovered at both Worldcons is that it's a good experience in that there's never enough time to do everything you want to.
Right.
And I'm missing so much stuff, and my schedule is cramped. And that's a much more positive experience than, God, I can't wait for this con to be over.
Well, and here's what I did, though. So I went to Reno. And I didn't schedule anything. And I had a miserable time.
Oh.
So when I went to ShyCon, I scheduled tons of things. And I made sure I was on panels. And I made sure authors knew I was going to be doing interviews. And where I was going to be. And let's do stuff. And I just scheduled. And I had a much better con.
Oh, God.
So I'm doing the same thing here. You know, I just find that if you know what you're doing ahead of time, for me at least, and even looking at the program and figuring out what panels you want to go to, you're good to go. You know? And then you just hang out at the bar.
Yep.
Any free time, hang out at the bar.
Yep, there's been a pleasant amount of hanging out this con that I was not able to achieve last time. Like, ShyCon was just run from formal engagement to formal engagement, and this time is a lot less structured. I'm doing a lot of interviews and such, but no actual panels.
Gotcha.
And just hanging around the bar a great deal, and occasionally trying to sleep.
So, the lies have been out for a while.
Yep.
I see nothing but good things about it online.
I'm really sorry. I keep nodding. You can't see this, listeners, but I keep nodding at the microphone. Like some kind of greetings, humans. I am new to your technology. I'll try to verbally acknowledge. Yes, it has.
So we have to do the obligatory thing, which is, you know, tell us really quick what the book's about.
Lies of Locke Lamora is essentially, it's a Renaissance/Elizabethan sort of world. With a little bit of magic. It's sword and sorcery. I'm a big lover of sword and sorcery, so it fits into that mold. They're essentially sword and sorcery crime novels. The characters are con artists in a world where this sort of crime, as we know it, is a new thing, and they are essentially the first people to develop it and take it to its natural limits.
If someone wants a signed copy, and they're not at Worldcon, or they can't get to a con, you have that set up on your website?
I have a P.O. box. Okay. It's very simple. It's on my website, but it's P.O. Box 87, New Richmond, Wisconsin, 54017. I will sign anything sent to me in the mail. I'm very happy to do so.
Cool. So they just send you the book.
Send me the book. I will sign it. I will deface it. I will do whatever. I get a steady volume of requests, but not so much that I can't do it. So
awesome.
For the time being, I'm very happy to do it.
See, I love it when authors are that available and accessible, and they're willing to do that, because not everybody can afford to come to a world con.
Yeah.
You know? It's a kind of an investment to come here. I justify it by doing all the interviews for SF Signal, you know? So, like I said, I've seen nothing but good stuff online about the book.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are there copies here in Worldcon? I'm curious.
There are a few. We did a signing at the Twig Bookstore in San Antonio, which is a lovely, lovely bookstore, by the way.
Okay. Independent bookstore?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
We love independent bookstores. Great place.
Yep. There's the sort of thing that gladdens your heart, you know.
Yep.
There were dozens of people there buying books and being enthusiastic who weren't there to see our signing.
Nice.
Maybe that doesn't sound so great. Yeah, it was great. We sat out there all alone and watched all the happy bookstore patrons buying books.
Who was at the signing?
There were nine of us. It was me, Drew Carpation, Kay Kenyon. Sorry if I butchered your last name, Drew. Mike Cole, Courtney Schaefer, and a bunch of other people. There were nine of us. We sort of arranged it. Some of us who did not receive signings through the normal programming channels set something up through Mike Martinez. That was mostly his doing.
Cool.
Thanks, Mike.
We like Mike. Yep. We didn't agree with him.
Yeah, he was like, let's do something. I'll get something for us. And so he wrangled a signing for us at this
very
really cool place. So I got to see more of San Antonio.
I got to see a little bit more of San Antonio, but I went to this gaudy Mexican restaurant called Mi Tierra Cafe that had a Spanish Elvis. And had glitter ceilings, and it was just crazy.
Wow.
It was insane.
We went to this we went to this fantastic place called Acera, which is on the Riverwalk, which had the best enchiladas we have ever had. Just
nice.
You know, just absolutely gorgeous. Not smothered in sauce or just that not chain restaurant style, just amazing stuff.
Not sitting
so
under the heat lamp.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Here's our tub of beans.
Yeah, that's what you're used to. You know?
Yes.
It's like 2 pounds of refried beans, and here's a scoop of lard on top of everything. Just in as much as a Minnesotan can have an opinion on Tex-Mex cuisine, it was wonderful. So that's
Minnesota.
And I'm from the frosty north.
I've been to Minnesota once, and that was the first time I had ever had a baked sweet potato with cinnamon butter.
Ooh, okay.
And I was like, wow.
Hey,
but it's still not worth coming back because it's too freaking cold.
We have a cuisine, but Tex-Mex is not it. So
I don't doubt it. So now, did you get a three-book deal? Is there going to be three in the series?
There are three written in the series, and it is intended to be a seven-book series. And
there
are currently five under contract.
Oh, cool.
So and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, they like me enough to finish the full series.
So when does book two come out?
Book two was out in 2007.
Book two was out in 2007?
Yeah, Red Seas Under Red Skies.
I don't remember that. Why don't I remember that?
I've reached the point where in my career people are like,
wow,
I don't even remember you writing that book. Yes, Lies came out in summer of 2006, and Red Seas came out in 2007, and then I went off to have adventures with depression and divorce for a couple of years, and so now a mere 5 years later, The Republic of Thieves is book three in the series.
Gotcha. Okay. So more than likely, Weimer's already read them all.
Hopefully.
And reviewed them all.
Hopefully, yes.
So who's your cover artist? Because I do remember the cover for Lies.
Well, okay, the U.S. cover artist for those original editions was a guy named Steve Spruill, whom I've never met, but I remember his name. And the cover artist that they use a lot nowadays is actually a French guy by the name of Benjamin Carré, who is with Bragelonne, my French publishers, who bought the rights to the French
publishers.
Okay. The cover that he did for Lies of Locke Lamora was so cool that essentially the UK people looked at it and said, screw it, we'll just buy it and use
nice.
That henceforth. And
don't
then the
you
US
love that?
Did the same thing. It's great. He got it. I mean, I'm mostly in love with all my covers, but he just got it. And he did a great job on Red Seas, and he is the guy responsible for the very striking cover for Republic of Thieves that you see right now, that everybody bought, US, UK, etc. So that's Benjamin Carré, and he has a website, and it's well worth looking at. He's a great artist.
Yeah, I remember the Lies cover, and that sticks out in my mind. Obviously, you had some stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
Did that end up coloring book three at
unexpected
all?
Unexpected awesomeness. It really did, because versions of the Republic of Thieves have been finished for years. It's just that in comparison to what I turned in, the guy who went into the book is not the same guy who came out, because on the other side, you know, I'm divorced and I've been through treatment for serious depression. The only real silver lining to this is that, frankly, I think the book is loads better. I don't think that the version of Republic of Thieves I would have turned in 2009, 2010 would have been anything to be proud about. The message is different, the writing is better, I mean, everything is sharper, and it's of a piece with the way I think these days. And it's a pretty clear separation between the guy I was in 2007 and the guy I am now.
Yeah, you kind of can't keep that out of your writing.
And this is not to say, I mean, I'm very proud of Lies and Red Seas. I'm happy with the way they turned out. But Republic would have been a disaster if it had come out at the wrong time. And that's really the only silver lining of the whole 5.5 year delay. I'm really sorry, but you do get a better book.
Well, that's good, though.
It's a cool thing to cling to. I mean, I basically, you know, you wouldn't think you'd have to, but after I sort of reemerged into basic human functionality, I mean, I had to relearn how to, not just to write, but to read. I mean, I went, over the course of my serious illness, the bad years, I mean, I went from reading 100 novels a year to reading maybe 6.
Wow.
I mean, I just checked out of everything. And you wouldn't think you'd have to relearn how to read, but to read at that rate, I mean, you do. You kind of have to retrain yourself in the basics of your life. And so I managed to turn the book in very early this year, and definitely this past year has been the smoothest and the most functional that I've had in a long, long time. And it's not a process I'd recommend. I mean, I really wish that I hadn't had those years sucked out of my life, basically. But the one bright spot is that I think Republic is drastically improved for the experiences I've had.
That's great. You know, there have been other authors who have spoken openly about depression and that kind of stuff. So it's cool that you are.
Thank you.
I know that my friend Murr talks about it quite a bit on I Should Be Writing. She struggled with that as well. And she's always urging people, if you even think you might be, you know, go get help. Because it's important.
Oh, God. Yeah. The thing is, you can... As I know from, as me and my ex-wife will tell you from painful personal experience, you can find excuses for anything. You can excuse any, and that's the natural human tendency, is to look for excuses and reasons to, you know, blame your dysfunction on something else. And it's always, it's just that such and such member of the family is dying, it's just that such and such is happening.
Right.
And you keep assuming that it's just going to get better, and it never does. Until you except that, you know, maybe you just have a serious problem that needs to be dealt with. And, I mean, that was where we were for a couple of years, is basically just, you know, living a lie, making excuses for incredibly dysfunctional behavior.
Sure.
And it's not like you go in and have a magic wand waved at you and you're suddenly better. I mean, it's been a difficult process since then. But I'm alive, and I'm publishing again, and I'm sociable again.
Yeah, and you're here, and you're smiling, and you're having a good time.
I mean, there was a period from late 2007 to late 2010, I didn't go to cons. I didn't want to be seen outside of the house. I couldn't bear to leave. I did one con, Armadillo Con, and that's because they invited me as a guest and took care of everything. And basically, I had somebody with me pushing me around to keep me functional on a human level. I wouldn't have arranged that on my own. I wouldn't have been able to.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I was really checked out of life for a couple of years.
Wow. Now, you said that you went from reading 100 books mm-hmm. a year to 6.
Yeah.
And you had to relearn how to read. What about writing?
It was the same thing, because I never stopped writing, but the thing is that I wasn't writing well. I was spewing words, but I lost my ability to concentrate. I mean, I was... It was a minor miracle that Lou Anders and Jonathan Strahan managed to squeeze a short story out of me for their collection in 2010, Swords and Dark Magic.
Yep, Swords and Dark Magic.
Which was pretty well received. I mean, In the Stacks was received very well, which is shocking to me. The thing is, I couldn't edit that story. I couldn't. I was racked with anxiety attacks. I couldn't return the manuscript to them. I couldn't do work on it. They had to edit it for me, and I just kind of had to trust their judgment. I'm still kind of dissatisfied with the text of that story, but I mean, I had to throw out half of Republic of Thieves when I hit around early 2012 and started sort of picking up my steam again, and learning to concentrate and relearning my focus and looking at things on a word-by-word basis and you know, being a functional author again, it was I don't want to say it was crap. It was very well meant, but the precision wasn't there. The consideration wasn't there. It was just ego spew. It was not structured.
Your tools had dulled.
Yes.
And you had to sharpen them back up.
Everything was wrong. Everything was out of practice. And it took another year or so of application to kind of get back to a reasonable level of competence and confidence.
Wow, now I'm nodding at the microphone.
You know? It's weird. I mean, it seems like, you know, obviously in retrospect, yeah, that's the way it had to be. But it's disarming, you know. I mean, the old cliche is, you know, you never need to learn how to ride a bike again once you've been taught. But in some respects, you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you getting back into short fiction as well? Are you trying to do that?
I've started doing a lot more short fiction.
Okay.
I owe one more story for the Kickstarter anthology we did. That's due before the end of the year. But
what's the title on that one?
That is Clockwork Universe: Aliens versus Steampunk versus Aliens.
Okay.
Which I'm really looking forward to. And that's the first Kickstarter I ever participated in. That's Zombies Need Brains LLC is the new little publishing imprint with Josh Palmateer and Patricia Bray.
That's a great name.
Patricia's got cards now that say, you know, CEO, Zombies Need Brains, LLC.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. That story's going to be a lot of fun. But I've turned in two more short stories this past year. One of them was called The Effigy Engine, which was for Jonathan Strahan's Solaris Book of New Fantasy, which he's going to do in a yearly sequel, a sequence. The first one was called Fearsome Journeys.
Okay.
And the next story I turned in was for a forthcoming George R. R. Martin Gardner Dozois anthology called Rogues, which is a big theme anthology to sort of counterpoint their Warriors anthology from a couple years ago.
Okay.
Except this time it's all about, you know, shifty, tricksy, steely people.
Right.
And it's all kinds of people. I'm in it, Neil Gaiman's in it, and God knows who else. A whole bunch of really cool authors.
I gotta tell you, there's nothing worse than being on a PvP server on World of Warcraft and having some Night Elf rogue come up and stab you in the back.
I was a Night Elf rogue. I played WoW for 4 years. And
what server?
I was on a server called Ravencrest.
Okay.
I was in a guild, and we were a fairly PvE guild, not super serious, but I did an awful lot of PvP. And I actually had the bizarre-ass experience of once upon a time on said rogue. Forgive me, I tell a lie. I was playing my warlock, and my warlock's name is Falconer. And I was on Falconer, and I found myself on the back of a tank being driven by a character named Nazca Barsavi, one word. Which was the most surreal experience I've ever had on WoW, because it's like, if you knew who was the Falconer standing behind you.
That's cool.
But my main was a Night Elf rogue.
I was on an RP server called Earthen Ring.
Cool.
And on Earthen Ring, it wasn't PvP. You had to do /PvP to go into PvP.
Wow.
It was a role-playing server.
Okay.
So really, the majority of people got their PvP going in, like, the arenas.
Okay.
Or when they had the Capture the Flag thing going. That was, like, the very first one they did.
Okay.
It was, like, a Capture the Flag. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I started playing WoW in very early 2007, right after the Burning Crusade was released.
Okay, so I was years before you.
Yeah, and I stopped... seriously playing about halfway through Cataclysm, like the second raid tier of Cataclysm. At that point, I had sort of recovered my equilibrium and I was getting more... I mean, I decided I'd rather have... WoW gave me many great things. I mean, WoW provided structure to me during the miserable years. I mean, WoW served a purpose. But I don't have the time to devote to it anymore.
Yeah, neither do I.
Nowadays, I have... world of, you know, having a job and a girlfriend.
Right, right, right.
And like, I don't mean that to be a dig against WoW, because
no.
I had a great fucking time with it.
It's a time suck.
Yes, and
yes.
I can't see myself playing an MMO again, though I'm generally very interested in developments in the field.
There are things that I don't allow myself to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have a self-imposed ban on entering comic book stores. Because... for many years, I collected comic books, and I actually had a saver, which means that they pulled the books for me.
Yep.
And put them in a box, and I would just come and buy them. And when I bought them, it was between $200 to $300 a pop every month. So I have a self-imposed ban on that. The other thing is, I started WoW when it very first came out. Mm-hmm. It had launched. My friend said, "Let's play it." We all bought them in like November or something as they were coming out.
Yep, 2004.
And I played all the way through the Wrath of the Lich King. So I played a lot. Mm-hmm. And we were undead though. We were horde. So for the horde. On our RP server, we always felt, and it's funny because I actually talked to somebody else who was on Earthenring. And I said, well, we went horde because we got tired of all the stupid kids playing Alliance. You know, and nobody wanted to roleplay. And they're like, no, we played Alliance because all the horde was full of stupid kids.
I had a horde character that I would occasionally, you know, used to check out Horde Trade Chat, and the thing you discover very rapidly is that Trade Chat is the exact same damn thing on both sides of the planet. We sort of fell into Alliance because those were the friends that we made. My ex-wife and I played together for several years, and she became our guild leader. So while it became a little awkward for me at certain points after our divorce,
right.
But she still leads the guild as far as I know, is a very good guild leader, is a killer healer. I had a druid who was sort of my second. Those of us who were officers in the guild were kind of allowed to have two mains for raid support. So I was a night elf rogue and a night elf druid healer. And I had some other characters that I messed around with. My warlock for PvP, my gnome tank, just because gnome warriors are loads of fun.
Yeah.
And who am I forgetting?
And when you play a gnome and you're running, it's like you're zooming.
Because
you're so close to the ground.
So, they're the cutest goddamn thing ever. If I had a WoW shirt, it would definitely say for Gnomeregan.
We took our whole guild to another server, and we did the Gnomeregan Kindergarten. And we role-played on a PvP server where all the we had dwarves and gnomes. The dwarves were the teachers, and they could only be healers. They could only be priests. The gnomes could be whatever they wanted, but they were all in kindergarten. And so we took them on field trips.
Aww.
We took them to Ironforge. And we did everything in open chat so that everybody could see. And we would always gather like crowds of people mm-hmm. that would follow us around and whisper to us, "What the hell are you doing?"
Oh, that's just adorable. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it was fun.
On a PvE server, you know, there were mostly people just wanted to get on with the business of the game. But I always cooked up really elaborate backstories for my characters. I miss my tunes is the thing. I don't miss WoW.
Right.
I miss my little team of five that I had. I basically had a full adventuring party by myself. I've been thinking of getting some artwork commission of them, but I'm sorry, I'm getting really nerdy here. But I would cook up stories about, you know, my gnome tank was a former accountant from Gnomeregan who lost his accounting buddies in a horde attack and decided to defend the Alliance rather than deal with its logistics.
Right.
Nobody cared.
Well, I used to put my RP stories about my characters on the Earthenring forums.
Ah, okay.
Because a lot of people did that. Now, a friend of mine, he was in the Tears of Draenor. He did the same thing. He got hired by a video game company to write lore for another game. And I'm like, what about me? What about mine? They never called me. Fine, whatever. Screw you, Blizzard.
It was for the most part. I mean, eventually, I tired of a lot of the aspects of PvE. I mean, the thing is that the game has a content reset roughly every 4 to 6 months,
right?
And an entirely new skill tree, and they swap everything up. And I understand why this happens.
Mm-hmm. To annoy the hell out of us.
To annoy the hell out of us. And the thing is, I can deal with rebuilding my character every 6 months. I can't. I reached a point where I could not deal with retraining the new crop of 13-year-olds. And I know that's an incredibly jerk-ass thing to say, but it's like I can't run any more random instances with people who don't understand the raw basics of the game.
I did that with adults. Mm-hmm. My friends that I started with, I out-leveled them, and I outplayed them. And so when they finally got up, like when Burning Crusade and Wrath of the Lich King was out, and you could go to these five-man instance kind of things, they called me and they're like, "We really need you to come back to Alliance and show us how to do this stuff." Well, it was like playing with Leroy Jenkins, I swear to God. You go into an instance, and the hunter has their pet on aggressive. And the pet goes off, and we get slaughtered. You know, and it's like, "Why are you doing this to me?" It was...
Yeah,
we're completely digressing.
No, that's okay. I, Ultimately, that's why I realized that I'd probably played all the joy out of the game that I was going to get.
Yeah.
And I had a good guild. I missed my guild. I missed my tunes. But I really don't miss that gameplay model. WoW was pretty awesome for a number of years, and I think that the time has come to move on in terms of an MMO game model.
Did you fall into the Skyrim trap?
Alas, yeah, well, Oblivion and Skyrim and Morrowind and the Fallout games, any Bethesda sandbox game is a trap for me. and I have played more Skyrim than is healthy, but the thing is that with Skyrim I can pause. With Skyrim, my pager goes off, I have to go to the fire department, I can just leave. And I don't feel like I'm attached to other people's schedules, I don't need to get together with anybody else to do it, I can fit it in whenever I want. So I have my Xbox 360 for that specific reason, basically, for the Fallout games and the Bethesda games.
I saw so many fantasy writers on Twitter talking about how they'd gotten sucked into Skyrim,
yep. Oh, yeah.
But I assumed all the publishing schedules would be pushed back by 6 months.
I played some. Okay, I guess in the long run of things, I probably could have squeezed another novel or two out in the time I've spent crawling around Cyrodiil. But you gotta have a hobby, and my hobby is walking around Cyrodiil, poking things with swords, and being a jerk, ripping carrots out of people's backyards and making high-powered potions out of them. I love this conceit that these poor people live in this medieval land which is terrorized by, dragonborn godlings wandering around stealing their crops and making high-powered drugs out of them.
Oh, boy. So, you mentioned the short fiction. You're getting back into that. You're doing.
Yes, I'm very eager to do more because I did no short fiction at first.
Okay.
When I sold my first novel, I'd written one short story all the way through to the end, and it's just something that I just did not get for a couple of years.
Oh, I find it really hard.
Good at it.
Yeah, it's really hard.
It's difficult. Unfortunately, there's no the old saw about, first you write first you write short stories, and then you write novellas, and then someday you attempt a novel, is totally ass backwards. You don't have to go any frickin' way. Write the novel first if the novel's what you're good at. But I've always wanted to write more short stories, and I'm finally getting the chance and finally finding my voice in that length. That range of.
And does that give you the opportunity to kind of get out of the Lies universe and do other stuff?
Yeah, everything I've written so far in short fiction has been unrelated to.
Cool. So that's kind of like an outlet for you then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because I know a lot of authors, when they get in a series, especially like an epic fantasy kind of setting, it's so intense and there's so much stuff that they have to do that they can't really devote a lot of brain power to writing other things.
Yep, yep.
And that starts to build up and drive them insane.
Yes, and short stories are a very effective safety valve for that for a lot of us. And I just always wanted to be the sort of writer who had a nice big portfolio of short stories. I mean, I'm in awe of my girlfriend, Elizabeth Baer, who's written, more than 100. And that's just in the last 8 or 9 years. And I've always wanted to be more productive in general. So.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of it, but Ken Liu, he writes a lot of short. He's actually written two short stories while we were doing this interview.
The bastard. And then there's Ted Chiang, who writes about one short story a year, but it wins every award in existence.
Right, right. Or Lily Liu. Yeah,
yes.
Lily Liu. Yeah, I'm tongue tied. I can't say
it. She's also very good. Yes, we love them all. We're not jealous at all. They're wonderful people.
By the way, dedicated author. I saw Saladin Ahmed sitting right down there every morning writing.
I'll believe that.
That's good. And really, it's like for him, this is a vacation.
Yes.
He's getting away from the kids and the family. He can write.
I don't mean to mock Saladin. Saladin is a very hardworking man who does a lot of stuff besides writing.
Yep.
And he's a father of 3-year-old twins.
Yes.
So he doesn't sleep.
Yes. He's like, oh my God, I have free time.
Yes. I don't have toddlers clinging to my legs.
So are you trying to get any writing in are you the guy that has to do a certain amount every day just to stay in practice?
I have accepted, and the thing is that I enjoy a robust lower back problem. So I've just accepted that being hunched over in my hotel room trying to write is physically a really bad idea for me.
Gotcha.
I've thrown my back out twice this summer, and so I've just kind of had to sort of step back and say, wait for your home ergonomic setup, because I never hurt myself there.
Gotcha.
I've just kind of had to accept that, you know, I'm lying to myself when I'm here, especially with my girlfriend and being sociable, and I don't have like an 8-hour plane flight to kill. I mean, I will write on planes. I'll write at airports. But when I'm at a con these days, I really try to be more sociable. I'm like, you know what? I can write at home. I can write at home for 14 hours a day if I feel like it. Right. Nobody can gainsay me. But if I'm in frickin' San Antonio, you know, or wherever, why not be in San Antonio? You know, I don't want to be that author who's so chained to his work that it's like, you know, must write 12 hours a day no matter what, because it's much cheaper not to have a hotel room and just write at home.
Well, there are folks who are using the Magic Spreadsheet. Have you heard of this?
No.
And you get points for writing every day.
Ah.
And if you don't write one day, your level goes down and you don't get as many points. And so it's just an excuse to make you write every day so you get into the habit of it.
For such a huge game, I mean, I'm a huge ass gamer nerd. There's no way of obfuscating that.
But achievement unlocked.
I've somehow managed to avoid gamifying most of my life. I mean, like my girlfriend has a Fitbit, or you know, the fitness Tamagotchi, as it's known. You know, reports the number of steps you've taken in a given day.
Yep.
Monitors your sleep cycle. You know, tells you, you know, whether you're a good person or a bad person. And you know, you plays those little games, you know, points for chores, etc. I should be a natural victim for that sort of thing, and they've just failed to sink into me. I don't know why.
Interesting. Okay. So, book 3 is coming out.
Yes, The Republic of Thieves is coming out. Most definitely coming out, come hell or high water. October 8th in the U.S. and October 10th in the U.K.
Okay. Hardcover, trade paperback,
it's going to be hardcover at first, and hardcover and ebook, and then there'll be basically every edition after that will be trade paperback.
Okay. Very cool. And you know who the cover art is going to be on that one?
That one is Benjamin Carey.
Okay. And you said that you are doing some short stories with anthologies like Gardner Goes Wah and George R. Martin. When are those coming out?
Rogues should be out next year in 2014. I mean, it should be like one of those huge 2-volume hardcover giant anthology with lots of stuff in it.
Nice.
Or you know, a nice big thick book like the Warrior Women anthology they just did, and Tales of the Dying Earth.
Okay.
Or Songs of the Dying Earth, or whatever that.
Limited edition? Is that what you're saying?
Oh no! This will be huge.
Oh okay.
Relatively speaking.
Gotcha.
Subterranean Press usually gets their fingers into this pie and might do a limited edition later. But this will be a fairly large budget production.
Okay. Website, Twitter, Facebook.
I can
that
be
kind of stuff?
Nice and simple. I'm on Twitter. I'm ScottLynch78. And on Tumblr, I'm ScottLynch78, and my website is scottlynch.us.
Very cool. Anything else you want to tell folks before I let you go? Is there any other conventions you're going to be at?
I will be doing, we've said no tour, but what we've thrown together has basically resulted in being a tour. I'm going to be at Context in Ohio at the end of September with Elizabeth Baer. And then we're having the release party for The Republic of Thieves on October 8th at Pandemonium Books in Boston. We're teaching at the Viable Paradise Writing Workshop for 2 weeks. I'm flying to Kentucky to do a one-night stand at Joseph Beth Books in Lexington, Kentucky.
Okay.
I'm doing a signing at Uncle Hugo's in Minneapolis. And then we are flying to the World Fantasy Convention in Brighton, England, where we'll be there for a weekend.
That's
and then
be cool.
Touring around London for... Yep. However long my publisher wants me.
And when you go to Kentucky, you got to drive. It's up in the corner. It's called Paducah. It's where my mother was born.
Uh-huh.
And according to my mother's family, that's the only place in the world where you can get barbecue. It's a little place called Harnett's. You got to get there early.
Do I really want to interject myself in someone's religious war, though?
Because you got to get there early because they only make so much, and when they run out, they just lock up
places.
And go home.
Awesome.
Yeah. And they got the little pit that you walk down in the back of them, and that's where they smoke all the meat and everything. It's so yeah. But anyway, all right.
So I'll be all over the place, and maybe possibly, don't quote me on this. We're still trying to put it together. Possibly San Diego and Seattle.
Oh, cool.
But that's only it's a strong possibility, but it is only a possibility at the present time.
And no love for Tattered Cover in Denver?
I would love to. really, for those of you listening out there who this is relevant to, it's really always just a matter of contacting my publicist at Random House, who is Dave Mensch, M-O-E-N-C-H, or write to me and ask who to be put in contact with. it's really a matter of asking if they'll send me out. You know, I don't arrange these things. I am invited to them.
Gotcha.
And I'm always eager and happy to do them. I just need to hear about it from other people.
Understood. All right. Well, Scott, thank you for coming on, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah. Thinking and crap.
Whenever I'm recording a podcast, I like to say, look, there's Paul Cornell.